Osho, The Hidden Harmony, talks on Heraclitus, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
Loved one, when some visitors unexpectedly found Heraclitus warming himself by the cooking fire, he said to them, "Here, too, are the gods." He also said, "I have searched myself. Time is a child moving counters in a game. The royal power is a child's." And he also said, "Bigotry is the sacred disease."
There are two ways to seek the truth. One is to borrow knowledge. Another is to seek yourself. Of course, borrowing is easy. But whatsoever you borrow is never yours. And that which is not yours cannot be true. This condition must be fulfilled. Truth must be yours. I may have known truth, but I cannot transfer it to you. In the very act of transferring, it becomes a lie. That is the nature of truth. So nobody can give it to you. You cannot borrow, you cannot steal, you cannot purchase. You have to know it. And unless you know, your knowledge is not a knowing. It is a hiding place for your ignorance. You are deceiving yourself. You are completely misguided. The first thing to remember is, truth is a lived phenomenon. Who can live for you? You have to live for yourself. Nobody can be a substitute. Who can love for you? Servants cannot do that. Friends cannot be of any help. You have to love. Jean-Paul Sartre somewhere says that sooner or later a time will come when people will engage servants to love for them. Of course, rich people is already on the way. Sooner or later, those who can afford, they will not bother themselves. Why bother when a servant can do it? You can find a beautiful, good servant, and he can love for you. You have other, more important things to do. Love can be left to servants. Mullah Nasruddin once told me that I am very much interested in my wife's happiness. So I asked, "What you are doing?" He said, "I have hired a private detective to search for the reasons." But can anybody else love for you? No, there is no possibility. You cannot be alive by proxy, and you cannot love by proxy, and you cannot reach to truth also by proxy. That is the very nature of things. There is no way to be cunning about it and clever about it. Man has tried. One knows. We can get it from him. We can borrow. But truth has to be lived. It is not something outside. It is an inner growth. It is not something. It is not an object. It is your subjectivity. Truth is subjectivity. So how you can get it from anybody else, from scriptures, from Vedas, Qurans and Bibles? No, Jesus is not of much help. Neither is Buddha. You have to go through it. There is no shortcut. You have to travel, suffer. Many times you will fall. Many times you will err. Many times you will go astray. That's how it is. Come back again and again. Start the search again and again. Many times the path is lost. Many times you move in a circle. You come back to the same point again and again. There seems to be no progress. But go on searching. Go on searching. Don't feel hopeless and dejected. Keep the hope. That is the quality of a seeker. He trusts. He hopes. He can wait. He can wait infinitely. He has patience. And he goes on seeking. Not that every step leads to the goal. Sometimes he is moving just the opposite. But even moving to the opposite direction, one learns. Even erring is a path to learn. Nobody can learn if one is very much afraid of being in errors. If one is very much afraid that he may go astray, then there is no possibility to travel. That's why the mind says, ask the awakened, those who know, gather from them. But then it is second hand. And there is nothing like a second-hand truth. It is simply a lie. A second-hand truth is a lie. A truth to be true has to be first-hand, original, has to be fresh. You have to reach to it. It is always virgin. Heraclitus says, I have searched myself. He is saying, I am not saying something that I have heard. I have searched myself. It is not something that I have learned. It is something I have grown myself. It is a growth. It is a subjectivity. It is my own experience. And when it is your experience, it transforms you. Says Jesus, truth liberates. But you know many truths, and they have not liberated you. On the contrary, they have become the bondages. They are the fetters around you. Truth liberates. Lies become a prison. That's why Heraclitus says bigotry is the sacred disease. A man who knows himself is never bigoted. He is never a sectarian. He is never obsessed by a theory. He is never making any claim that only he is true. Because when one knows the truth, he knows the truth is multifaceted. He knows that there are millions of ways to look at it. And whenever someone comes near, whatsoever he sees is individual. It has never been so before. It will never be again that way, because this individual has never been there. And this individual is totally unique. So every vision, every encounter of truth is unique. It cannot be compared. A man who has known himself also has come to know that millions are the paths, millions are the faces of truth. How he can be bigoted? How can he say only my truth is true and only my God is God and your God is a false God? This is the language of one whose truth is borrowed. You see millions of religious people all over the world claiming they have not come to know. They have not searched themselves. Otherwise, how they can miss? How can they miss the multifaceted experience, the phenomena of truth? How can they say only my truth? Because when one comes to know there is no I, how can they claim? How bigotry is possible? A really religious man has no claim. He accommodates. He does not tolerate, because when you say I tolerate, there is intolerance. He does not say that I am a Christian, you are a Hindu. Yes, I am a man of tolerance, I tolerate. You may also be true. I am true, you may also be true, I tolerate you. But tolerance is always hiding intolerance. The very world is intolerant. So whenever a person says, I am tolerant, be aware. He is intolerant. He is hiding. What do you mean by tolerance? You think you are somewhere higher, and you are tolerating those who are lower, pitying them. Or at the most, a Christian will say, yes, there are many ways, but my way is the best. Yes, people have reached from other ways also. But my is the super highway. That too is intolerance. Why this claim? Why this I? Why this ego? And that's why religions became so quarrelsome. They have murdered, they have killed, they have committed all sorts of sins, and they are here to liberate man, and they are here to make man beyond all sins, and they have committed all the sins. Religions have killed more than anybody else, and they have created misery and strife and struggle and conflict more than anything on this earth. This earth is ugly because of so many churches, temples, mosques. They have not united man. They have divided. they have not made humanity one. They talk about love, but they have created hate. They talk about peace, but they create all sorts of causes so that violence exists. They feed violence and they talk about peace. Why? The reason is not religion, the reason is the bigotry. Says Heraclitus, bigotry is the sacred disease. Diseases are bad, and when they are sacred, they are more bad, of course. When a disease looks like sacred, you think it is the ultimate in health. Whenever one claims that I am the only truth, and the claim can be done in very subtle ways, even these mad people have forced their gods to say things which look absurd. Mohammedans say that the God says, I am the only God and Muhammad is the only prophet. What do you mean? Is God exhausted in Muhammad? Then the God is very poor. Then what about Mahavir? Then what about Buddha? Then what about Jesus, Krishna, Lao Tse, Heraclitus? And what about you all who are going someday or other to become the prophets? What about the whole? Muhammad is beautiful, but Mohammedans claim that he is the only prophet, and then ugliness enters. Jesus is wonderful, but Christians say he is the only begotten son. Why the only begotten son? Then what you all are? Bastards? He is the only begotten son. Then what is this whole existence? From where you come, if he comes from God, then who is your father? No, God is infinitely potential. Millions of Jesus can come from him, and he remains the same. He is not exhausted. That is the meaning of omnipotent. If he has only one son, he seems to be impotent rather than omnipotent. He goes on creating, and the creativity never ends. That is the infinity. But Christians claim that Jesus is the only son. Why this claim? So that they can claim their book is the only book. The word Bible means the book. They have not named it, because this is the only book. All else is rubbish. What about Upanishads? What about sayings of Buddha? What about Tao Te King of Lao Tse? Why the Bible the only book? Yeah, it is beautiful. But when it becomes the only book, it has become ill. This is the sacred disease. When you claim for your truth that this is the whole and all, the ego has entered. A truth needs no claim. It's simply there in all its beauty. You can see, but it has no claim on you. In fact, truth never tries to convert anybody. It helps. It loves you. It would like you to be transformed. But there is no effort to convert. When people start converting, Hindus try to make Christians, Hindus Christians try to make Hindus Christians. Why this effort? Because they believe that they have the sole key and the only key, and everybody else is going to hell. They make the thing very narrow. Infinite is the way, because to infinity it leads. When the goal is infinite, how can the way can be so narrow? In fact, whenever a man is religious, he is neither a Christian nor a Hindu nor a Mohammedan. That's what I am trying to help you to be, neither Christians nor Hindus nor Mohammedans. Why you can't simply be? What is the need to carry a label of a sect? If you feel good, if you love Jesus, it is very beautiful. If you love Buddha, it is good. But why I become bigoted? Why become prejudiced? Your love is beautiful, and if it helps you, it is good. You move accordingly. But then are there millions of people who move in different ways? Let them move. Let them help. Wherever they are going, let them help. Help them to move to their own way. Let them do their own thing. Don't force them. And don't try to convert them. If they look at you and they feel something and they want to change their path, it is up to them. That's why Heraclitus is completely forgotten, because he never created a sect around him. He had followers, but he never created a sect. And he never claimed. He never said, this is the only truth. Why this appeals? When somebody says, this is the only truth, why this appeals? You are very uncertain and confused. When somebody claims that this is the only truth, you think he must be knowing. Otherwise, how he can claim? The claim becomes a subtle influence. He looks authoritative. But remember well, a man of knowledge, a man of understanding, is always hesitant. He is not so authoritative, because he looks the truth and he feels it cannot be expressed. He hesitates. You will find poetry in his words, but you will not find statements. He has a subtle aroma around him which gives you a feeling of certainty, but that certainty doesn't come from his statements. His statements are always hesitating. Before he says anything, he hesitates, because he knows whatsoever is said cannot be the truth. And he knows that whatsoever he is trying to do is a dangerous thing. It is a hazard, because words destroy. And when you hear the words, you will give your own meaning to them. He hesitates. He does not know what will happen to his words. What you will do out of his words is unknown. And each single word can become a very, very meaningful or meaningful effort on your part. He hesitates. He watches you. He looks all around. He tries to find your center of being. Then he says something, so that it never becomes a misunderstanding, so that it doesn't misguide you. so that if his words can help, it is okay. Otherwise, they don't prove harmful to you. He hesitates. But a man of borrowed knowledge never hesitates. He is very, very certain. You just go and listen to Christian missionaries. They seem to be so certain that their certainty says they are stupid. Why this certainty? And they don't know anything. They have been trained. Trained for everything. I used to visit a theological college, a Christian theological college. I used to watch how they prepare priests and ministers. And I was amazed. The whole thing seems to be so stupid. Even gestures are practiced. How to stand on the pulpit? What to say? How to say it? When to raise your voice high? And when to whisper? And how to raise your hand? When to raise it exactly? Everything is trained. They look like actors. And they don't know anything. But they never hesitate. They have been trained. Training cannot make you religious. Discipline cannot make you religious. Learning cannot make you religious. You can become an actor. You may become a very skilled actor. You may become so skilled that not only you deceive others, you are yourself deceived. If you ask psychoanalysts, they have an answer. A man who feels himself hesitant within will always create a certainty outside. He is afraid of his own inner uncertainty. So he clings to certain statements. A man who is certain within doesn't bother. He can hesitate. He can afford hesitating. There is no fear. He can say perhaps. There is no need to be certain. He can say God is summer and winter. God is night and day. God is satiety and hunger. God is rest and restlessness both. He can be paradoxical. The paradox is used just to give you a feeling that the man is not claiming anything, he is simply trying to say the fact. And if the fact is complex, let it be so. If the fact is contradictory, let the statement also be contradictory. Let it be a true reflection. You cannot ask from a man of learning to be so paradoxical, God is summer and winter. No. He is absolutely certain what God is. God is day, never night. God is light, never darkness. God is good, never bad. God is peace, never war. When God is both war and peace, where you are, you become uncertain. You hesitate. Says Heraclitus, I have searched myself. That's why he is so paradoxical. Always look for the paradox. You will always find it if a man has searched himself. Because then what he can do? If existence is paradoxical, what he can do? He has to represent it as it is. But go to a missionary. He has never searched. He has learned much. He can quote scriptures. In fact, he cannot do anything else than quote scriptures. And you know very well, the devil is very much skilled in quoting scriptures. He is the perfect missionary. When some visitors unexpectedly found Heraclitus warming himself by the cooking fire, he said to them, "Here too are the gods." He never went to a temple. Because if you are a man of perception, if your eyes are open, if you can hear and feel, then what is the need to go to a temple? Here are also gods. God is not a person. God is all that is, the case. God is existence. Just imagine the picture, Heraclitus sitting by the fireside, warming himself. The cracking of the wood, the rising flames towards heaven, the warmth, must have been a cold winter night. Unexpectedly, some visitors come and they ask, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Here are also gods." This is a prayer, that's what he is saying. This warming yourself is a prayer if the fire becomes a divine phenomenon. It reminds me of a Zen master, Ikku. He was staying in a temple. The night was very, very cold. So he made a fire. But not finding wood anywhere, he brought a statue of Buddha, a wooden statue from the temple, burnt it. The priest was fast asleep. Noise, the fire, and this Ikku moving here and there. He looked, he opened his eyes and looked, and he was aghast. He couldn't believe, because this was a Buddhist monk, and not only a monk, but a very famous master. And he was just staying overnight in the temple, he was journeying. He came running, he jumped out of his bed and he said, "What are you doing? You have burnt a Buddha." Ikku took out a small piece of wood, searched in the ashes for the Buddha. The statue was almost gone, nothing was there. The priest said, "What are you searching there? It is no more there." Ikku said, "I am searching for the bones. Buddha must have bones." The priest laughed and said, "Now I am completely certain you are mad. How can a wooden Buddha have bones?" Ikku said, "Then bring the other two Buddhas also, because the night is still long and very cold. And the Buddha within me needs a little warmth. And these Buddhas are just wooden, don't worry. Here inside are bones and a real Buddha. And this Buddha needs a little warmth. And these Buddhas are no good. They have no bones. So don't worry. the priest threw him out of the temple. The night was very cold, but there are people who will worship a wooden Buddha and threw a real Buddha. In the morning he looked out what happened to Ikku. He was sitting just outside the temple near a milestone and worshipping. The sun was rising. It was a beautiful morning, and he has found few flowers from somewhere. He has put those flowers on the milestone and he was worshipping. Came running the priest, said, "What are you doing? You are really completely mad. In the night you burnt a Buddha and now you are worshipping a milestone." Said Ikku, "Here is also a god." Heraclitus said, "Here too are gods. If you can feel, every moment is divine and everything is divine, and all that exists is holy. If you cannot feel, go to the temples, go to the mosques and churches. You will not find anything else there also, because it is you who needs a transformation. It is not the situation that needs change. The situation is the same in the temple, outside the temple, everywhere God is. It is you who cannot see, and you change places. From the house you go to the temple in search of God. You need an inner transformation. The change in the situation won't help. You need a psychological reorientation. You need a totally new way of looking at things. Then suddenly the whole world becomes the temple. Then there is nothing else. And for Heraclitus, fire became the symbol. And fire is really a beautiful symbol. Heraclitus says fire is the basic substance of life. It is. Now physicists agree with Heraclitus. They agree that electricity is the base of all existence. Everything is nothing but modes of electricity. Heraclitus says it is fire. What is the difference? And fire is a more beautiful word than electricity. Fire gives a sense of more aliveness than electricity. Fire is more wild than electricity. When you say electricity is the base, it looks as if universe is somehow mechanical, because electricity has become associated with mechanism. And then God looks like an engineer. But electricity is fire. Hindus have called this basic element prana, vitality. But vitality is fire. When you are fighter, vital, alive, you are fiery, a flame. Henry Bergson has called the base of all elan vitals, just like prana. Those who have been seeking, somehow or other they come near fire. This existence is deep down fire. Fire is life. And Zarathustra is right. He made fire the supremest god. He must have agreed with Heraclitus. They were contemporaries, Zarathustra and Heraclitus. Fire became the supreme god for the followers of Zarathustra. Fire has many things deep in it. You will have to understand the phenomena of fire, the symbol because it is a way of speaking. It is a metaphor. Something deep Heraclitus wants to indicate when he says fire is the substratum. Watch fire. Someday on a winter night you also sit by the side of fire and just watch. Just feel it, the warmth. Cold is death. Warmth is life. A dead body is cold. A live body is warm. And you have to maintain a certain warmth continuously. An inner mechanism exists in man to keep the warmth to a certain limit always, because only at that certain degree life is possible. Just 95 degrees and 110 degrees, just between those 15 degrees, human life exists. There are other lives which exist on other temperatures, but human life has just a span of 15 degrees. Mulla Nasruddin was very, very ill, feverish, high fever, and the doctor took the fever and he said 105. Mulla opened the eye and asked, "What is the world record?" Because the ego always thinks in terms of world records. He was thinking, maybe I couldn't beat in any other way. Maybe I can break the world record in fever. But beyond 110 there is no record, because the man simply disappears. So much fire you cannot absorb. Below 95 you disappear, so much cold. Death settles in. That's why we say warm welcome, not a cold welcome. Warm love, not a cold love. Because cold symbolizes death, warmth symbolizes life. Sun is the source, the solar energy is fire. Just see, by the evening everything becomes sad. Even trees, words become completely silent. No song, all songs disappear. Flowers close. And the whole earth waits for the morning. And by the morning, the sun has risen not yet, and the earth starts becoming ready to welcome. The birds start singing even before the sun has risen. That is a welcome sign. Flowers start flowering again. Everything becomes again alive. Movement enters. Fire is a very, very meaningful symbol in other ways also. If you watch fire, you will see continuous upward movement. Water flows downward. Fire flows upward. That's why Hindus call the fire of Kundalini. When you rise upwards, you are not like water, you are like a flame of fire. When your inner being changes, you feel a flame going upward. Even water, in contact with fire, starts evaporating upwards. In a very, very old Tibetan scripture, it is said, A master is like a fire and the disciple is like water. If the disciple comes in deeper contact with the master, the quality of the disciple changes. It becomes the quality of fire. Just like water heated evaporates. Water without fire moves downward. With fire, immediately a change comes in. Beyond 100 degrees, the fire has made the water ready to move upward. The dimension changes. Fire always moves upwards. Even if you hold a lamp upside down, the flame will go upwards. The flame cannot go downwards. Fire is an effort to reach to the highest peak, to the omega point. Another thing, if you watch a flame, you can see it only for a few seconds, split seconds, then it disappears. The higher you go, the more you disappear. The lower you go, the more you become solid. Watch the water. If it goes on low and low and low and becomes cold and cold, it becomes frozen. It becomes ice. Then it is like a stone. Then all movement stops. Then it is dead. When water is frozen, it is dead. It is no more alive. You will have to melt it through fire. Then movement appears again. You will have to heat it so much that it comes to a 100-degree point. Then it moves upwards. So three stages are there, no movement. That is, you are frozen. Movement downwards, that is, you are like water. First stage, like ice, second, like water, and third, when you evaporate, then you move upwards. In you, almost all the three stages exist simultaneously. Some part of you is like fire moving upwards. Very small part, very tiny. That's why you have come to me, otherwise there is no need. Why you have come to me? You must have a tiny part which moves upwards, and a tiny part which feels by the, your whole being, feels being pulled down. That is the anguish. You know that something in you goes towards the divine. In some moments, you feel like a bird and you can simply fly. But only in some moments. But in those moments also, the greater part of you is hanging like a stone. One part hangs like a stone. Almost 90% of you is like ice. 9% of you moves like water downwards. In sex, in anger, in hatred, you move downwards. But at least it is better to move downwards than not to move at all. That's why I say, if I feel very much frozen being in you, I say fall in love. Move towards sex. At least it will melt you. Of course, you will not be flying upwards. You will move downwards, but at least movement is good. And once movement is there, then the direction can be changed. The dimension can be changed. But to frozen, just go to the monasteries and see if you want to see perfect examples of frozen ice. Go to the Catholic monasteries or Jaina monasteries. There you will find perfect frozen ice cubes. No man. because they are against sex, they are against food, they are against everything. They are just negative, they have been negating. And if you negate, by and by, your life loses fire. If you negate, because fire is a positive force, if you negate, you become cold. Negativity is a method of suicide. By and by you die. In fragments, you kill yourself. Then you are frozen. But this is no achievement. In fact, it is falling down. I tell to people that if you are frozen, then move towards sex, that will help. Of course, it is not going to lead you towards the ultimate. But one thing will happen, you will start moving. When you love a person, when you feel for some other person, your bioenergy starts moving. That's why in sex you feel very much excited. Fire has come into function. And when you make love, your body temperature rises. Love is like fever. A temporary fever created by your mind. That's why after love you relax deeply. You have a flow. If you can attain to sexual orgasm, a complete flow happens, then your bioenergy is moving. Those people who cannot have deep orgasms are difficult people for meditation also. Because they cannot move. How they can move upwards? The first thing is movement. The second thing, to turn the movement upwards. And they cannot move. They are afraid. They are frozen. You can exactly see their body as a frozen phenomenon. You touch and you will feel their body is cold. You shake hands and you will feel you are shaking hands with a dead branch of a tree. No movement. You take their hands into your hands and you will not feel that any energy is being transmitted. The hand is there, just like a dead branch. It doesn't give, it doesn't receive. It doesn't communicate. And you can watch people just by their walking, their face, their movements, you can see whether they are orgasmic or not. And the first thing for a master to know about you, whether you are orgasmic or not. If you are orgasmic, if your whole body vibrates when you make love, and the vibrating phenomena is so deep that you are no more for a single second, of course, you just become a flow. From toe to the head, the energy is moving like a flood. And there is no blocks of ice within you. Everything melts. After making love, you fall in sleep like a child, because the energy has moved. You have played long. You are tired. But this tiredness is very nice. This tiredness is relaxation. Now you can relax. And the body feels alive. Hence so much appeal for sex. Because it is really finding a way. Your body tries to find a way to be orgasmic, to be river-like. Not frozen. When you are frozen, you cannot relate. When you are frozen, you are closed within yourself. You live in imprisonment. And from this imprisonment, there is no way to God. You will have to melt. And before you reach to the divine, when you can relate to the divine, you will have to relate to other persons in this world. Because when you relate to other person, that is love, care, your body melts. It flows. When it flows, then another step can be taken. In a flowing energy, it is very simple to heat it in certain inner ways. All meditations are methods to give you heat, more heat than sex can give. Particularly the meditations we are doing here are all to create fire within you. Through breathing, fast, chaotic breathing, fire is created. Because breathing brings you more and more oxygen. And when there is more oxygen, more fire happens. Without oxygen, there is no fire. Even if a flame burns, it burns because of oxygen. If there is no oxygen, the fire will subside automatically. The more oxygen has to be brought to your body because you are too frozen. And you are not enough alive. You are not enough warm. And people come to me, particularly the frozen people, they say, we don't like this dynamic meditation. They don't like, because they are frozen. And they have invested too much in their frozenness. They don't love, but they think they are brahmacharis, celibates. And they are simply frozen, ice cubes. In their life there is no movement, but they think they are detached. Of course, there is a detachment that comes when you flow upwards. That is totally different. And there is a detachment when you don't flow at all. Of course, a dead man is detached. A dead man is celibate. A dead man is completely dead. You can be detached like a dead man. That is what has happened in the monasteries of the whole world. And you can be detached in a totally different way, qualitatively, diametrically opposite way. That is when you become so much alive that the fire comes to a point where the water doesn't flow downwards, it starts flowing upwards. More fire has to be created within you. You should become a furnace. Absorb more oxygen. Make more effort. Allow the body as much movement as possible. Bring energy, throbbing energy. It is there, just you have to make it throbbing. Live like a flame, burning from the both sides together. Then only, suddenly one day, you will find your energy is flowing upwards, you have become a flame. And then you can see up to an extent yourself, and then you are no more. Then suddenly you disappear into the cosmos. Then you have become one with the divine. This is the symbol of fire, that you can see it only for a few seconds and then it is disappearing. A Buddha is continuously disappearing. You look at me. If you can see, you can see I am continuously disappearing. Just up to an extent you can see. That's why the aura is seen around a man who is awakened. That aura is nothing but a disappearing fire. Continuously disappearing fire. Up to an extent you can see it. That's why the aura. Beyond that aura there is nothing. It disappears. Heraclitus is very, very right in finding the symbol. It is not a philosophical statement. In Greek histories of philosophy, they think Heraclitus is proposing, like others, like Thales, Anaxagoras, Anaximenes, like other Greek philosophers, he is proposing an element, because there are four elements: the earth, the water, the fire, the air. So there have been philosophers who have proposed that earth is the basic element. Somebody has proposed that water is the basic element, somebody that fire, and somebody that air. Heraclitus proposes fire is the basic element, but he should not be understood in the way Thales is understood. No, it is not a statement. It is not a statement about a philosophical theme or theory. He is not proposing any doctrine. He is a poet. He is not a philosopher at all. He is giving a symbol. And the symbol means much more than the word fire. Watch fire outside, then watch fire inside, and become as much aflame as possible. That's why Heraclitus says, when some visitors unexpectedly found Heraclitus warming himself by the cooking fire, he said to them, "Here too are the gods, and I have searched myself." And I am not just saying because others have said, I have known myself. Time is a child, he says, moving counters in a game. The royal power is a child's. The royal power is a child's. And time is a child moving counters in a game. The whole concept of leela, play, he condenses in just few sentences. Life is like a play. Don't make it a business. Otherwise you will miss it. You miss it because you make a business out of it, and it is a play. Play well, but don't think in terms of achieving something out of it. Just be like a child. He plays. He is not worried about what he achieves out of it. Small children, even if they are defeated in a game, jump and feel very happy. Failure is not a failure if it is a play. Defeat is not a defeat if it is a play. Otherwise, if it is a business, even victory is a defeat. Ask Napoleon's, Alexander's, even victory is defeat. What you find finally, you are victorious and nothing has been achieved. You longed for this goal so much and now you have reached and you simply feel frustrated. And the whole life is lost. Remember, your life will be lost if you are after some goals, because life has no goal. It is a purposeless play. It is not going anywhere. It is simply enjoying itself. This is the most difficult thing to understand, because the mind is mathematical. It says, then what is the meaning of it? Then what is the purpose? There is no purpose and no meaning. Then the mind immediately said, if there is no meaning, then why live? Then why not commit suicide? But see, if there is meaning, the whole thing will become ugly. Then it will be like a business. If there is purpose, then whole life will lose the poetry. The poetry is there because there is no purpose. Why the rose flowers? Ask the rose. He will say, I don't know. But flowering is so beautiful. What is the need to know? Flowering in itself intrinsically is so beautiful. Ask a bird why you sing. And he will be simply puzzled at what nonsense questions you ask. Singing is so beautiful. It is such a benediction. Why raise the question? But the mind looks at the goal. The mind is an achiever. It cannot simply enjoy. Something must be there in the future to be achieved. Some goal must be reached. Then mind feels good. But if there is nothing to be achieved, it flops. But that is what the whole effort is. Let it flop. There is no purpose. There is no goal. This moment, the whole existence is celebrating except you. Why not participate? Why not be like a flower? Purposelessly flowering. And why not be like a river? Meaninglessly flowing. And why not be like the ocean, roaring, just enjoying? This is what Heraclitus says, time is a child, moving counters in a game. The royal power is a child's, and every child is a king. Just watch a child. Every child is simply a king. Emperor. Look at the movement. Even if the child is naked, no emperor can compete with him. Why a child is so beautiful? Every child, without an exception, is beautiful. What is the beauty of a child? Because he is still uncontaminated by the mind which seeks purpose, meaning, goal. He simply plays. He doesn't bother about the next day. A small child came home. The mother was very angry. And she said that I have heard from neighborhood childs that you have thrown mud in a small girl's mouth. And you had been punished, and you were standing outside the class the whole day. He said, yes. The mother was horrified. He said, but why? Why you did throw that mud? The small child said, well, he shrugged his shoulders and said, the mouth was open. The why is meaningless. It is enough. He had the mud in the hand and the mouth was open. So what to do? It simply happened. We are asking why. Why is irrelevant for a child. It is how it happens. The mouth was open and he had the mud. He has not done it really. We punish him wrongly. He has not done it. It happened. It simply happened this way. It was a coincidence that the girl was standing with her open mouth. He doesn't mean anything. He doesn't mean any harm. He doesn't mean any insult. He simply welcomed the opportunity. He enjoyed it. But we ask why? Between a child and a grown-up exists an abyss. They are poles apart. The child cannot understand why, what the adults are saying, because he lives in a totally different dimension, the dimension of play. And the adults cannot understand what the child is doing, because the adult is a businessman. He lives in the world of whys, reasons, causes. They never meet. They cannot meet. There is no possibility of understanding unless the adult becomes again a child. Only a saint, a real sage, can understand a child, because he is also a child. He can understand. I was reading a small child's diary. 25th December. In the diary it is written, got an air gun from Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe is the greatest uncle in the world. There has never been such an uncle and never will be, etc., etc. But it is raining and I can't go out. I would like to hunt immediately. 26th December. It is still raining and I am feeling very, very restless. 27th December. It is still raining and I am frustrated and feeling very aggressive and violent. 27th December. It is still raining. Shot Uncle Joe. This is a child's world. He moves without any purpose, playing. Playing in itself is enough. If you can become a child again, you have achieved all. If you cannot become a child again, you have missed all. A sage is a twice-born child. And the first-born childs are not real childs, because they will have to grow up. The second birth is the real birth, because when somebody is twice born, he has given a birth to himself. It is a transformation. He has again become a child. He does not ask for reasons and whys. He simply lives. Whatsoever the moment presents, he moves with it. He has no plans. He has no projections. He lives without demanding anything. And that is the only way to live. Otherwise, you simply appear to be living, and you are not alive. For a child, there is nothing bad, nothing good. There is no God, no devil. A child accepts everything. Again, a sage accepts everything. That's why he can say, God is winter and summer. God is peace and war. God is devil and good, both. For a sage, again, all morality disappears. All distinctions fall down. Everything is holy, and every place is sacred. I was staying with a family, a Christian family. The mother was talking to the child. She was saying that this is not good. You need not pray so loudly. You almost shout. Prayers are not needed to be shouted. God can hear you. You need not shout so much. But the child said, but it says, hallowed be thy name. A child lives somewhere else. The mother was very, very angry. I told her, you don't disturb him. Don't disturb his childhood. It is too soon. Let him follow his own way of praying. He is enjoying it. And that enjoyment is the real thing, not the form. He jumps and hollers the name of God, and it is beautiful. Why you are teaching? Because this is the way it should be. If you enjoy, it becomes a prayer. If you don't enjoy, if it becomes a discipline, and somebody else is forcing on you, then you feel imprisoned. Let him holler and let him jump, and I can be a witness to him. God hears him. Whether he hollers or not, that's not the point. But when you enjoy, a man who can be blissful need not pray. Prayer is a poor substitute. A man who is blissful need not meditate. A man who is blissful can live the moment blissfully, has done that can be done. Everything is holy and sacred. You can eat your food in such a way it becomes prayer. You can love a man in such a way it becomes prayer. You can dig a hole in the garden in such a way it becomes prayer. Prayer is not something, a formal thing. It is the quality you bring to it. It is a prayerfulness. The royal power is a child's. Why? Because the royal power means innocence. God comes to you when you are innocent. When you are cunning, the door is closed. Never destroy anybody's innocence. Never create doubts in somebody who is innocent. Because innocence is the royal power. Never create doubt in anybody. Because once trust is destroyed, innocence is broken, it is very, very difficult. It is just like a broken mirror. And this is the problem for a master. You are all like broken mirrors. Somewhere on the path of life, your trust has been destroyed. You cannot believe. You have been raised to doubt. You have a very cultivated, sophisticated, doubting mind. And this is the problem. And nothing can happen to you, not God No, unless a trust is created again, and you are like a broken mirror, and you insist to be a broken mirror, you think to doubt is some great thing that you have got. That's your poverty. A child's heart, the rile is the power. With innocence, the power comes to you. And when I say trust, and when all the masters of the world say trust, they mean become innocent. And you insist that you will doubt, and you will argue, and you will first rationalize. You should be convinced first about something, then you will take a step. And that is the very problem. Precisely that is the problem. If you can take one step in darkness, trusting, everything becomes possible. But you cannot take one step. But look what you have achieved through doubting, where you have reached with this broken mirror. You have become addicted to it because it has remained with you so long. Mullah Nasruddin was teaching his son the ways of the world. A small child, a beautiful child, he told him to go up a ladder. The child followed, and he always liked to climb, and he was surprised because why? Because always Mullah was saying, don't climb the tree, don't climb the ladder, and why? He was very happy. He climbed, he reached to the top, and then Mullah said, now jump. The child hesitated a little, but the Mullah said, I am your father, why are you worried? Jump. The child jumped, and Mullah moved away. The child fell down on the ground. He started crying and weeping, and he said, what you have done to me? Mullah said, now remember, don't believe anybody, not even your father. This is the way of the world, and I am making you ready. Don't believe anybody, not even if he is your father. You have learned a good lesson. Don't trust. This is how every father, mother, teacher, schools, universities are preparing you. Don't trust anybody, because somebody may be dishonest. He may be a fraud. He may deceive you. But this is the problem, that even if the whole world deceives you, you will not lose anything. But if you doubt, you will lose everything. Doubt is the real deceiver, because ultimately you will miss God. The God comes through the door of innocence. Can you trust anything in your life? If you search, you will find nobody, nothing you can trust. It happened, a man came to a very great mystic, Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna said, you love somebody? You trust somebody? The man said, I don't trust anybody, and I don't love, except my cow. Nagarjuna said, that will do. You completely believe that your cow is the god. Love her, trust her, feed her, care about, and after 3 months you come to me. But the man said, how it can happen? Just loving the cow and trusting the cow? Nagarjuna said, you don't worry, after 3 months you come to me. The man came completely transformed. He said, what miracle you have done? I cannot yet believe, and it has happened, that just trusting the cow and loving and caring, and I have experienced something which has completely made me a different man. I am reborn. But how it could happen? Just trusting a cow? Nagarjuna said, it is not a question of trusting a cow. It is a question of trusting. If you can trust even a small thing, from that the door widens. And when you have tasted trust, you become more capable of trust. When you taste more, you become more and more capable. And then you can take the ultimate jump. Time is a child, moving counters in a game. The royal power is a child. And about time also, Heraclitus has no mathematical theory. About time also, he says, it is just like a child moving counters in a game. The day and night they move. Heraclitus does not believe that time is going somewhere. It is moving. It is moving in a circle. It is not linear. It is like a wheel. And this is something to be understood. All the scientists think that time is linear. It is moving in a line. And all the knowers of the inner say it is a wheel. It is not linear, it is circular. There seems to be some reason for it. Scientists cannot see the whole. They see just a part. The scientific mind is a specific mind, specialized. The scientist can see only a part. And he divides the part also to see even a smaller part. He goes on dividing. The scientist cannot see the whole. The very discipline of science makes him capable to see the part more clearly. He goes on seeing more and more clearly, but less and less. His vision becomes clear and penetrating, but his object becomes smaller and smaller. He comes to the atom, the smallest. And he comes in time also to the moment, the smallest. And if you see a small sector of a circle, it will look like a line. And the circle is vast. And just like on the earth, we are sitting here, and if we draw a line, you think it is a straight line, then you are wrong. Because on a circular earth, how can you draw a straight line? If you go on drawing that line, continue, it will become a circle, it will cover the whole earth. So all straight lines are just parts, fragments of a vast big circle. Science cannot see the whole, that's why time seems to be linear. Religion sees the whole. Science misses the forest, it looks at the tree. Religion misses the tree, looks at the forest. And when you see at the whole, everything is circular. All movement is circular. Time is also a circular movement. It is a game, not going anywhere, moving. If you can see time is not going anywhere but moving in a circle, then the whole tension of the mind to reach somewhere drops. Then to reach somewhere in the future becomes useless, meaningless. Then you start enjoying the moment. Life is not an effort to attain. It is a celebration. Bigotry is the sacred disease. But even this you should not make in a theory. Because the moment you make a theory and you say this is right, you will start converting people. The moment you say this is right, your ego has taken it. Now, it is not the question that this is right, you are right. How you can be wrong? Then the sacred disease enters. With me also, remember this, whatsoever I say, don't make it a claim. Whatsoever I say, don't make it a belief. Don't become closed by it. And whatsoever I say, the opposite of it is also true, remember. Because if you say the opposite is wrong, you will become bigoted. Then the bigotry enters. If I say God is winter, God is summer also. And there are moments when I say God is winter because that will be helpful. There are moments I say God is summer because that will be helpful. And to some I say God is winter and to some I say God is summer. Don't create a theory around it. I am also a poet. You need not believe in what I say. You have simply to do something what I say. Let it become a transformation, not a theory in you. Don't make a sect out of it. Make a life out of it. Live it. And if you live it, you will help others also to live it. Only through living you help. Not through talking. Not through converting. Not through going around and making people more enlightened. No. This is a very subtle mischief. You be enlightened. And you will have a light within you and people will come and drink out of it. There is no need to go out of the way. And if somebody is following his own way, don't try to pull him out of it. Who knows? That way may be for him exactly right. It may look wrong to you, but who you are to decide? Don't decide and don't judge. Because bigotry is the sacred disease. Whenever a person becomes religious, that disease is possible. Whenever one becomes religious, one becomes vulnerable to this disease, bigotry. It is very difficult to find a religious man and not bigoted. It happened. I saw Mullah Nasruddin drinking in a bar and asked, Nasruddin, what are you doing? Just yesterday you told me that you have left all drinking and you have become an absolute teetotaler. So what are you doing? Nasruddin said, yes, I am an absolute teetotaler, but not a bigoted one. Whatsoever you are, remain flexible. Don't create a fixed frame around you. Remain moving and flowing. Sometimes one has to go out of the discipline also. Life is bigger than your discipline. And sometimes one has to go completely against his own rules. Because God is both summer and winter. don't be a victim of bigotry. Be religious, but don't be a Hindu, Mohammedan, Christian. Let the whole earth be your church. Let the whole existence be your temple. And when the whole God is available, why be satisfied with a fragment? Why say Christian? Why say Hindu? When you can be a human being, why choose labels? Drop all labels and drop all beliefs. Trust. And trust is totally different than beliefs. Trust life wheresoever it leads, move with it. And help others to move on their own way. Do your thing and let others do theirs. Remain open. If you can remain open, helping, caring, not forcing things on others, you will see that people have started drinking out of you. That people are being helped by you. You don't go directly to serve them, because service, compassion, love, care are all indirect. You don't jump on them. You don't force them towards heaven, because that violence has been the misery of all the past. Because of that violence, Christians, Hindus, Mohammedans have been fighting, killing each other. Enough of it. No need of it now. Now the earth has become one. The whole globe has become just like a small village. Let the humanity also become one. One in the search, not in the beliefs. One, because everything is divine. Remember always, Heraclitus, here too are gods. I have searched myself, and the royal power is child's. Bigotry is the sacred disease. Enough for today.